Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week,
I lost my brother, you know, in the summer to suicide. He's only 19. He's supposed to go to medical school. And he never told us that he was struggling. You know, I'm an older brother. I'm a doctor. He just couldn't speak about it. He couldn't have shared what he felt.
It really, really struck a chord with me as a really simple trick. Not just if you've had a terrible, terrible bereavement, but actually something you can do in and of yourself. And it's something I massively advocate now when people talk to me about mental health.
I think the stakes are very high. I think if we don't get this right, I think the number of lives we're going to lose over the next few years to suicide is going to be truly frightening. I think the impact on the mental health of children is going to be frightening. And I think the wider impact on society in the years to come will be unthinkable in a way.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
And we've got a brilliant guest on this week's Mental Health Monday. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Dr. Alex George. Now, Dr. Alex is a doctor, first and foremost. He works for the NHS, but many people will know him as well from a TV show. Now, I'll be absolutely honest, Dr. Alex, I've never watched that particular TV show. There was like a celebrity version of Love Island when I was like sort of 19 or 20, which had like celebs on. I think George Best's son was on it and some people like that. But you're very, very well known because of
really
your TV appearances as well.
Not watching it. I think many people, I think it was a show that a lot of people watched, but I think quite a few people avoided it as well, which I can understand. So, but it was a lot of fun. It was an experience very far from the experiences that we're having right now, I must say, but definitely an interesting time of my life.
No, absolutely, absolutely. You've got your campaigning head on, actually, for what we're going to talk about on the programme this week. And it's for an issue which has come up many, many times on Mental Health Monday, I must say. And it's an issue which gets talked about so much. And you've got almost a call to arms on this one around mental health education. We'll talk through some of the issues, and there's a wide variety of issues contained within. But first and foremost, you put something out there on social media saying, look, something needs to happen. Just set out what it was you wanted to say, the message you wanted to get out there.
Yeah, so I've kind of been working on this over a few years, and it strikes me, and it certainly has throughout my time at school, and I think people's experiences that I've spoken to, that really the support in school around mental health, education around mental health, just isn't there. It's not what it should be. And we know how important that is. You know, some of the statistics around suicide being one of the leading causes of deaths for kind of young men, and you know, the rising rates of anxiety, depression around the country. It's been really worrying for me, I think, that we don't do enough about it. And I think since what we've seen with the pandemic and the impact that's had on young people's mental health, as well as everyone else's, I think it's time for change. It's more than due. And so I put a post out asking to meet the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. I know he's a very busy man, but asking to meet him to discuss some of the changes which I'd like to propose. I've been working behind the scenes now for nearly 6 months, speaking to leading organisations to find out exactly where the issues are and what we can do. And I think it's time. Now is the time for change. You know, now is the time that we actually do the things that we know need to be done. You know, that it's vital. It will save lives. I'm sure of it, if we can actually implement some of these changes.
The conversations I've had on this, you know, right from the off, Dr. Alex, have been sort of, it's so clear why this is required. And it's actually twofold, isn't it? Because, of course, it's for the requirements of children who have mental health issues going through school. But it's also for us as adults, isn't it, to make sure that when we get to adulthood, we have a wealth of education and resilience built into us because we learnt about it at school. And if you place that investment in the younger age, when they get to 24 or 28 or 34 or 38 and an issue comes around, there's something in your mind that at least you've got, you can tie it back to. And whatever that education was can benefit us throughout our whole lifetimes.
Absolutely, Mick. I couldn't agree more with that. I think that's the big thing that people have got to realise. First thing I say is that mental health doesn't affect one in four. It affects four in four. It affects every single one of us. We all have mental health. It's not something you do or don't have. We've all got it. You know, everyone has periods of time in their life where things are tough. You know, something bad happens or you're struggling. You know, very, very few people go through life with this kind of rosy picture of, you know, how life is. And actually teaching, as you said, young people how to look after themselves. What to do and how to maintain their mental health and resilience and what to do when it goes wrong. I think it's just vital. It just makes such a difference. Like you said, you know, being able to talk about how you feel. I think, you know, we're in, you know, modern times now, and, you know, men still struggle to speak about their mental health. I mean, I lost my brother, you know, in the summer to suicide. He's only 19. He's supposed to go to medical school. And he never told us that he was struggling. You know, I'm an older brother. I'm a doctor. I was, you know, someone that was there to support him. And he just couldn't speak about it. He couldn't have shared what he felt. And that's all too common. And that stems for me, you know, a large part of that stems from how and the culture of how we speak around mental health. We need to make it normal at schools to talk about it. It's normal to learn about it. And in some ways, it almost becomes expected of you. So when you are actually struggling, it just becomes second nature. It's not awkward. It's not a taboo. It's just a normal thing that's part of everyday life.
In terms of that, you know, as young people growing up, you remember you look both ways before you cross the road. You don't speak to strangers. Is it as simple as that, that actually we could instill in young people some really key messages about mental health so that if things did get out of control, they would have something to fall back on as we fall back on the green cross code when it comes to crossing the road, or as we fall back on, you know, knowing how to stay safe now online? We need to fall back on something for our mental health as well, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you think about it, exactly what the example that you've used, if you instill it in young people, you know, from a very young age, and people talk about, oh, you know, is it good to talk about mental health? Well, if you're old enough to have thoughts and feelings, you're old enough to learn about mental health, and you should be, because that is the age in which we can instill these ideas and normalize this conversation so that as they grow up, it just becomes part of who they are inherently. And that's why when I look at the curriculum, and some of my issues with the current curriculum is that, A, mental health is hardly in there. In fact, if you want to tick the Ofsted box, if you like, you can do one mental health lecture a year and pretty much tick that box. But when I look at the curriculum, I really, really want to see that we start at a young age, from, you know, age of 2, 3, 4 years old, learning the basics of thoughts and feelings. I'm not saying going there talking about anxiety, suicide, and depression at an early age, but just teaching about the basics so people understand what a thought is, what is a feeling, you know, how do they relate to our thoughts, how does that relate to our physical health, you know, and just starting to build that knowledge up so you graduate that knowledge over the years up to the age of 18, where they walk away understanding how to look after mental health. They understand also, you know, what depression is, what anxiety is, the signs of suicide or feelings of suicide with themselves and other people, what to do if that happens, and also how to take what they've learned and, as you said, you know, put that into real life. Because when you go into the working world, you know, as you know, make it stressful, that like the world isn't always rosy, and you have to have resilience, you need to have coping mechanisms which are healthy. And that's such a big part of what we can teach kids at school, so that when, you know, when you start a job, say as a nurse, and you're working in the hospital, that you learn about good sleep health, you learn about you know, how exercise can actually benefit you, you learn about the role of, you know, the gut brain axis, you know, nutrition and food, how that actually does play a role in your mental health. Like all of these things, they're all small parts, they're all small pieces of the jigsaw, but put them all together and it makes a difference. You know, I'm sure of that.
But that's why teacher training is so crucial in this one, because actually some of the things you've just described there, this isn't, you know, a new curriculum which has to land on schools and it's a whole host of extra work for teachers. The stuff around nutrition, where you learn about carbohydrates and dairy and so on and so forth. My daughter's doing that. She's 6 years of age at the moment. Actually, from what you've just described there, you could also... the mental health thing could be part of that.
Incorporated, absolutely.
That's not a wholesale change where it's just everyone's got to learn how to teach everything completely different. It's about those little tiny references that reference the fact that actually mental health is in everything anyway.
In everything. It goes back to the premise, and I always harp on about this. You cannot separate physical and mental health. If your physical health is poor, say you enjoy playing football and you've got an injury and you can't play, you then feel sad because you're not able to play the sport that you love. And if you're not playing the sport, that can impact on your kind of physical health and that cycle. But vice versa, if your mental health isn't good at that time, you maybe don't feel like playing football, you don't go to the football matches or training, and your physical health starts to suffer because maybe you don't eat as well and you're not getting natural sunlight because you feel sad. And so the two things are so interlinked, and it should be like that in the curriculum as well. We should be incorporating it into everything that we teach. And I've been to some schools who I've shown great examples, I think, of what can be done. And that is exactly what they've done. They've incorporated mental health into their well-being, into their classes in the morning. So you come in for your not assembly, your kind of what's the word? Start of the day, and, you know, the
registration.
Registration, that's it, I lost the word. Registration. And they talked about how they'd incorporate wellness into registration, whether that's a few minutes of mindfulness, whether it's breathing exercises, and just settles everyone down for the day. And it's great for the teachers as well. You know, everyone's benefiting from it. They incorporate it into the actual lessons as well. Yes, they have set classes, actually, which they have on mental health and well-being, and have different topics each week, and that's brilliant. But you really feel that kind of wholesale approach. This school that I went to is actually in Norfolk, also had mental health first aid trained teachers who wore ribbons on their lanyards to signify that they were mental health first trained, that it was a I'm here to talk message for pupils. So they knew that that teacher was someone they could speak to. There are also banners on some of the doors of some of the senior staff who were trained, and it said, come and talk to me about mental health, or come and talk to me about how you're feeling. And the way they incorporated it just really, I think, showed how it can be done. They also had, which was brilliant, and something I'm really, really fighting for, is they had a counsellor who was full-time at the school. And what that meant was two things. Number one, pupils got to know the counsellor. It wasn't some kind of therapist, oh my gosh, you know, what's this mental health score scary, who's a therapist? It's a normal person. It was Jill or whoever it is that they know and they see every day. They feel comfortable with that person. And again, it just builds that culture of, this is normal. This is just normal. And people would knock on the door, they'd make appointments with her and go and see her. And she talked about the benefits of not only, you know, primarily as an outcome of the mental health, but also attendance. You know, school attendance is much better, because a lot of reasons kids are at home are either issues at home or maybe with the mental health. And if we tackle those things early and support them, it actually benefits the academia as well. And I think that's the key thing. Everything is tied in. If kids are happy and they're engaged and they feel supported, they're more successful at school.
Absolutely. And actually, that's one of those sort of arguments that a government might listen to, that actually you're saying, not only are you making young people healthier in terms of their own minds, but also you're doing good work for the system as well, that if they're in a better place, they're more likely to learn, they're more likely to get their positive educational outcomes. But also, if you have someone who's a designated talk to me about your feelings person in that school, that young person presumably will be more likely to then potentially reveal situations at home, issues that they're having, which they wouldn't reveal potentially in a classroom. Absolutely. Situation. That helps the school help that young person too.
Definitely. It's just that doorway sometimes that allows you to kind of find and, you know, fix problems before they become so big. And I think that's one of the things that's really, I think, sad and a tragedy when we lose life, you know, to suicide, because a lot of these situations, quite frankly, are preventable. You know, it's kind of a situation of, what if we got in there early? What if we could have had interventions, you know, and helped this young person and supported them? It's awful. You know, I always find it very sad. I've had it many times in hospital where someone has come in and they've self-harmed or they've attempted suicide. And I always ask them, who have you spoken to before? You know, is there someone that you've kind of reached out to? And it's so common that they tell me, no, you are the first person I've talked to about this. And that, to me, is a failure of society. I feel that strongly, but I think we as a society have failed that person, that they have gone all the way through their lives, you know, sometimes suffering for decades in some cases, and they haven't felt comfortable enough to say something. That is really, really sad, I think.
I think so. And I've spoken to, you know, many, many different people who have looking at suicide from many different angles. And unfortunately, you've had firsthand experience with your brother. A good friend of mine came very, very close to suicide. And actually, one of the things that he was dealing with his own mind was, I can't handle this anymore. I don't know what to do. He thankfully was unsuccessful in his attempt, and he's now through at the other side. But actually, he said to me, he said, Mick, he said, how would I know what to do? Why would I know? Who's ever told me where to go? Who's ever sat down and said, this is what you should do if you feel like this? Those messages don't exist. But actually, as soon as you instill those messages, suddenly you get those little triggers where you think, oh, actually, this now reminds me of the thing I learned about when I was a child. I think that genuinely will save lives, won't it? Because people will suddenly go, oh, actually, no, this is a thing I know about, and now I'm experiencing it. And I know where to turn because I was taught about it at school.
And not even just the person's experiencing it. If you're the people around them and you were taught about, you know, supporting people's mental health or what to do, you know, you have understanding and you're, you know, in some way much more in the know, that's going to help that person as well. So it's not even the person themselves, the people around it, and spotting the signs of someone who is struggling or someone who might be feeling suicidal, for example. Having that skill set, if you like, is just going to benefit the people in both directions. And that's what I've looked at this for a while at schools. And what I really feel is that we have the resources out there already. There are incredible organizations that have done so much work. You've got Anna Freud, who have basically made all the resources we could possibly need for education for mental health from a young age to 18. They've done it. It's there. We've got incredible organizations like Shout, who, if a child or someone's struggling, they can text the number and then they'll be someone will reply to them and support them and get them help if they need it. You've got organizations, obviously like Young Minds, Mind, Calm, all these people are working hard towards it. They have great resources. It's just trying to get it in there and get the system changed so we let these people in. If you ask 10 children, but 10 children in line said, have you heard of Shout? I'm fairly confident that maybe none of them would have heard of it, maybe one or two. And that's a terrible shame, because for that one person who wanted someone to speak to, they don't want to pick up the phone, they're too shy to speak to their teacher, being able to sit and just text the short number and say, I'm struggling, and have someone come to them and have that open door, that could save that child's life. And that, to me, is just a real shame. We need to have it standardised, so that people know it's there, because some of these brilliant resources are already there. That's what this campaign, what I'm doing, is trying to highlight what's already there, highlight what isn't there, and bring it all together. That's what I want. I want the key pillars of my campaign are, number one, we need to teach teachers at university properly about mental health. You can't just expect teachers just to go out and do it. They really want to, and I have that feedback from them, but we need to teach them properly. We also need to support teachers' mental health. It's one of the professions that we see some of the highest rates of mental health illnesses, of substance abuse and alcohol, etc., because of the stress and the pressures. We need to support them as well, because if they're not supporting their mental health, how will they support children? The curriculum, we want to incorporate in the curriculum to put mental health sat alongside all the other core subjects, so that when Ofsted come in and they look at around the schools, they're looking at maths and English, they also look at mental health in exactly the same way. And it should be that precedence at the top, and that curriculum is integrated from a young age to 18 of good quality teaching. Now, the third area that I kind of touched on earlier that I really, really want to push on, I think this is absolutely vital, particularly post-pandemic, is the support. So counselling at schools and support services at school, we need to ramp that up. I think this year I saw there's a 4% increase in the mental health budget for the country. I mean, the whole country has been impacted by mental health. Children's mental health has been absolutely, there were some figures I saw the other day that the diagnosis of mental health conditions in children have gone from 1 in 9 to 1 in 6 in the last year or so. And I think that's only going to go in one direction. So we need to support these children through these next few years. And I think having a counsellor at every single school is a must. It just should be a part of just, that's what schools are. It always, there's always a counsellor, designated counsellor, and the children know where to go. Those are the key pillars, and those are the areas I hope the government will listen to me on.
I think a number of years ago, I think when Theresa May was Prime Minister, they announced a series of overhauls of mental health within school, and it had, at the time, what were classed as, I think, ambitious targets. But a lot of people within the mental health sector, but also in schools, kind of said, well, I think it only affected, at the time, it was up to 50% of schools would have access to one of these counsellors, and it wouldn't be that service that you're suggesting would be available to all children as well. If it comes at a cost, is it worth spending the money? I guess the answer is absolutely yes.
It's worth every penny. And I was actually there on the day on World Mental Health Day when she announced those, and I spoke to Theresa May on that day. And I said, look, I really feel that we need to go further for new school students and university students. We need to go further. And I don't think it was met with the correct, I don't think it was met with the level of realisation that I think it should have been. I think there are some improvements in some areas. So we're seeing a new RSE and PHSE curriculums come through, which has some element of mental health teaching within it at schools. It doesn't go anywhere near far enough, but there is some steps. So if you ask me, is it improvement? Yes, but it's 5-10%, not 100%. So that's the same situation of what she was doing there. You're going some way, but we need to go the whole way. We need to really back this. Yes, does it cost money? Absolutely. But so does the cost of loss of life from suicide. So does the cost of acute admissions of young children or adults with mental health issues. So does the cost of you know, children either being off school, but also people wanting to become adults, not being able to work and function in society. So it's I hate to say it, but in some way, it's a real investment in our own society as well. You know, yes, it's expensive, but we should be doing it.
Let's talk about this from a society point of view, because some people will say, well, children's school's great because it's, you know, such a key point of their lives, apart from now when a lot of them are closed. But like, I think people would also say, what is it that maybe parents need to know? What are the things that maybe parents can do? Because your child is in school for the 6 hours of the day, but actually most of the time they're not in school. What are those things that you would recommend that parents look out for, signs in their children, maybe almost like a little exercise you can play with your kids to make sure that they're aware of their mental health as much as anything?
Yeah, and I think it's about a kind of a multi-angle approach to it, isn't it? I think with parents, one of the things I would say, the key things, is try and make a really normalized culture of just talking how people feel. Because I think, and part of the reason, I go back to part of the reason why I'm focusing on schools, is because I believe that is the time you can change behavior and create these, instill these kind of things we talked about earlier, and resilience and openness, etc. But if parents can do that and really be aware of themselves and maybe be aware of some of the things, or unlearning some of the things I might have learned, or societal norms or awkwardnesses around mental health, trying to wind that back. So with your own children, that from a young age, you talk about how you feel, you also share how you feel. Because I think, you know, if sometimes people talk about, you know, your dad being like really stoic, or he never talks about his feelings, etc. But that then instills on the children. Whereas if the father can be really, and I'm using this as a very stereotype here, and I know I am, but deliberately so. If you see the parent going, actually, you know, I had a bad day today, and we're going to talk about it openly, or you're just making it a very normal part of that conversation, children pick up on that, and they become, or feel, it's much more comfortable for them to talk about how they feel. So I would say that try and normalize that conversation, and when people feel bad, talk about it, ask children about it, don't feel uncomfortable about talking. I think a lot of the time people worry about saying the wrong thing, and I always think it's better to say something than nothing. So if you're intuition is that someone is, your child is struggling, they've got maybe more quiet than they usually are, maybe they're more, you know, we talk about grumpy teenagers, etc., maybe they're more agitated than they usually would be, ask them how they're doing. You know, how are you doing? And we talked about this campaign before called Ask Twice, and the idea being, you know, you ask once, you go, yeah, I'm fine. And if you feel in your gut feeling, I don't think that's actually true, either in that moment or when you think it's right, approach it again and say, you know, you said earlier on you're okay, but actually, I got the sense that maybe something's bothering you. Do you want to chat about it? Would you like to talk? And of course, you can't force people to open up. People have to make, children the same, they have to make that decision themselves. But, you know, quite often, you know, you find that people, when they feel comfortable and you've given them that open invite, they might well come forward and say, I'm struggling. But the main thing I would say is just trust your gut. If you think there's something wrong, you're probably right. And follow up on those thoughts and feelings.
I think that's a really great show, and I think really helpful advice as well. I was speaking to a mum who lost a son to suicide, and actually one of the things that she was talking about, and I'm certain that you'll have had a similar experience given your own experience, is that in terms of getting through those days, weeks and months afterwards, she found it really helpful for herself to almost check in, right, how are you feeling today? And it was a scale of 1 to 10. Like, well, I'm a 3 today. Well, actually, I was a 2 yesterday, but I feel like a 3 today. And then when it became a 6, it was like, okay, well, what are the things that I'm doing now that I was, you know, and how have I moved on from a 4 and a 5? And it really, really struck a chord with me as a really simple trick, not just if you've had a terrible, terrible bereavement, but actually something you can do in and of yourself. And it's something I massively advocate now when people talk to me about mental health, where I say that the number one thing you can do first and foremost is check in with yourself. And I do this now. I've got a 2-year-old and I've got a 6-year-old. When we sit down around the table, either at breakfast or at tea, we go, how are you feeling today? Marks out of 10. And if it's like an 8, it's, well, why do you feel so great? And then actually, so why is it an 8? And the eight is because they painted a great picture, or they watched a movie that they really, really loved. So that's like, you associate the mental health with the positive. But also if they say 6, you can go, oh, why do you feel like a 6 today? They might talk about, you know, maybe they fell out with a friend, maybe they've had a bit too much screen time, maybe they didn't sleep very well the night before. And I've tried to work that in to the conversation. I found it really, really sort of useful. And actually, our kids now, my two-year-old just says I'm two because he thinks he's two. So my daughter now thinks he's sad all the time. But I think it really resonates with them. And then we do the same for ourselves. And we go, well, I'm an eight, but I'll be a nine when it's Saturday morning because then we can watch SpongeBob. You know, and things like that. Yeah. And I think that's a really simple thing. And I don't necessarily think you need to teach it, but you just need to sort of adopt it into those routines. The routines that we've got anyway, we've all got routines in our lives.
But and it takes no time, and that doing that makes difference, doesn't it? It takes no time, and that's powerful on so many levels. Firstly, because they then know it's absolutely normal to talk about it. Dad talks about it; it's normal. It's part of family. There's no issue. It becomes so normal that there isn't. If they ever feel that they need to say something, there's no barriers. And I think that is a huge part of that. But also, it's just like you said: it's finding out when things go well, why they're going well, and when they're going bad, they're not. And there's coping mechanisms. And when we were talking about what can parents do, I think instilling the good coping mechanisms really helps. Teaching children, or let's get outside, go for a walk. It's great. It's natural light. It's important for us. You know, the benefits of exercise, sleep hygiene, all these kind of things that we know help our mental health. If you just can instill that into daily life, they then grow up with this just inherent understanding of like, oh well, I don't feel great today, but then I slept terribly. I probably had too much caffeine last night, and I worked quite late. I actually haven't eaten very well the last 2 days. And when's the last time I went for a walk? Probably 4 or 5 days ago. And then they go, oh gosh, that makes sense. Right, I need to. You know, readjust now. I need to make sure today I go for a walk, have an early night, do a bit of exercise, and voila, the next day I feel a bit better. So yeah, instilling those things definitely makes a difference, I think.
Great. I'll carry on with doing that. In terms of the family situation you found this year, has that sort of galvanized yourself to realize, well, you knew before because of the work you do, but just how important the work that you're doing now is, and how high the stakes are? What's at stake if we don't get things right when it comes to young people's mental health?
Yeah, I think, after my brother, Theory, after he passed away, I think that was, fuel to the fire for me. And I was like, I really need to do this. You know, I've got, a platform. I hope that people listen to me and I can actually get the ball rolling. I can't do it alone. I need the support of, the organizations I'm working with and people to actually just vocally back what I'm doing. I mean, the fact that you're, I'm very grateful that you're having me here to talk about this. You are helping amplify this message, and people like yourselves are really helping as well. And I think the stakes are very high. I think if we don't get this right, I think the number of lives we're going to lose over the next few years to suicide is going to be truly frightening. I think the impact on the mental health of children is going to be frightening. And I think the wider impact on society in the years to come will be unthinkable in a way. So we have a duty really to these are children. They don't have the choices. They can't fight for themselves in that way. We have a duty as the adults to look after that next generation, and I really hope that we get it. I will give up. I'm going to keep pushing on this topic. I'm going to be very noisy around this until we see the change that we want made, but it needs to happen. It has to.
Dr. Alex, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us. People can follow you on social media is a good place to go, at Dr. Alex George. That's Twitter. On Instagram, you're on as well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, both. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. So people can do that. I'll put links as well in the podcast links as well. Have you got a book coming out as well?
I have. I've got a book called Live Well Every Day. It kind of incorporates a lot of the things that I talk about around little things and changes you can make to your life to improve your kind of overall health and happiness. I've been working on the book for well over a year. I finally got to kind of finishing it. So it comes out in May. And if you'd like to pre-order it, it's on Amazon now. So yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll speak again. I'm certain of it very soon.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.